Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. It is a beautiful day in the city. Welcome inside the clubhouse on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball like we do every Saturday morning this week, wondering if the Cubs will ever lose at Wrigley Field and whether the White Sox will ever run out of muscles to pull. Good morning, Bruce.
Yeah, what a calamity in Kansas City. We will certainly get to that, David. But, wow, just watching the White Sox struggle to score runs, watching the Cubs pull out some more magic here in Wrigley Field. What would you call it, a predictable start to the 2024 season, David?
Well, I think that you feared the worst with the White Sox, and they have delivered, unfortunately, with Eloy Jimenez being on the injured list, and now Luis Robert Jr. headed there after last night's hip injury. But with the Cubs, Bruce, I think that maybe a little better than expected. Obviously, you expected them to play well, to play smart and intelligent baseball. But the way that they have done it offensively, the way that they have gotten starting pitching after Justin Steele's injury, to win five in a row after an 0-2 start, maybe a little better than expected. So, yeah, it's been an interesting first week. You're at Wrigley Field today. The Dodgers are back in action against the Cubs. And I think there's a lot to discuss about why the Cubs are off to the kind of start that they are.
Inside the clubhouse, you can reach David Haw at 312-644-6767. That's also our text line. And, David, I'm surprised by all the offense that the Cubs have been supplying at home in bad weather. Yesterday, even though the sun peaked out at certain times during the year, they are hitting line drives everywhere. It is an offense that you wouldn't predict. You wouldn't predict that Suzuki necessarily was going to be one of the top hitters in baseball. Yeah, he had those two great months in August and September last year, but that has been a great start. And their offensive approach against one of the best young starting pitchers yesterday by the Dodgers was impressive.
No doubt about it, the Cubs are getting production throughout the lineup. It's as deep, it is dangerous, and it is by design. We talked all offseason about why they needed Cody Bellinger back just to solidify that lineup. You wondered if they were a bat short. Doesn't look like it after the first week, but it is a long season. And we'll continue to discuss ways they might be able to improve that or what is next, because the Dodgers are going to be fun the next couple of days. This is a fun series. Craig Counsell was right when he said that yesterday. Bruce, we're going to have fun today. Steve Stone is going to join us at 9:30. Ben Brown, speaking of fun, the young pitcher who had quite a night the other night against the Rockies in 30-degree weather in short sleeves without anything underneath it. That was great to see, and he's going to join us at 10. We're going to play a little chin music. Let's start with a question, though, I think maybe people will want to weigh in on, and maybe you have a thought on. 312-644-6767. When you look at this lineup up and down, how sustainable is it, Bruce, do you think that the Cubs offensively are going to be this team and this selective at the plate? The one thing that stands out is how they are walking and striking out at about the same rate, about 15%, right, and that leads Major League Baseball. So if you're that disciplined at the plate, it can get you by. You can get by without necessarily having another power bat or another superstar or whatever the case may be. They are more selective than ever. Is that by coincidence or design?
So I asked that exact question to Suzuki in the post game yesterday, David, and we're not going to play the translator's answer, so we'll just talk about it, you and I. And it was Suzuki's answer through his translator, and he said, look, it's Wrigley Field. I know it. My teammates know it. in April now. Nobody's trying to hit home runs. So we're going up with the best approach, and we're trying to hit the ball where it's pitched. Now, it sounds simplistic in the answer, but the reality is they're not only hitting the ball, they're hitting the ball with authority. So since the rehabilitation of Wrigley Field back 10 years ago or so, the new boards that are put up in the outfield have changed the way that balls go, especially to left center field. You can hit a line drive out of Wrigley Field with the wind blowing in because you have that board. It's an unscientific proof that I have to that, David, mm-hmm. but nonetheless, it's a reality. You hit the ball hard like Suzuki, who's hitting balls at a rate of 115 miles per hour, it's going to go out of anywhere, including Wrigley or Yosemite. It is that dramatic right now.
What are the dimensions at Yosemite, by the way?
I don't know, but the press box there really sucks.
You're always complaining, Bruce. You know, you mentioned Suzuki, and I think that it's hard to identify through 1 week what the biggest difference is or what the biggest reason is for what we're describing in terms of this lineup discipline and the selectivity at the plate. But I think he's the key to so much this season because of where Craig Council put him in the order, number two from day one. And also just how good he has been since that August demotion. Bruce, through this first week, he's got two home runs. He's already driven in 11. His average is 345. His OPS is 1.015. And he's getting on base at 394 clip. This is the guy that keys, I think, everything. And I wonder, is it just the... Does something click last August? What is it about, say, a Suzuki that has changed, and why is he so good so consistently right now?
Well, you know, David, maybe Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins are a lot smarter than us in the media or anybody who covers baseball, because as of March 1st, it looked like they had no power in the lineup, okay? They were hoping on Bush. Okay, they didn't have Bellinger yet, okay? And now Suzuki, was it going to be sustainable? And again, it's a sample size, you know, with only, you know, a week of the season gone here. But was it going to be sustainable from what he was doing last August and September? And they felt the answer was yes. They weren't going to go after Hoskins at first base. They were going to trust that Bush is going to come around and be a power hitter himself, as he proved yesterday mm-hmm. at Wrigley Field with a big home run against his former team. But these are things that separate front offices, good ones like the Cubs have, from people like us that sit there and wonder if the moves they make, or more importantly, don't make, are going to work out.
It's the way he carries himself. It's maybe, as was pointed out this week earlier, about how he also has adjusted to the league and now has a book on different pitchers that he faces and just more prepared. It's also just the confidence in a player that is obvious to see, and that's what Craig Council identified when he talked about Seiya Suzuki.
Seiya was a big producer in Japan, and he got that, you know, stretch of time here in the big leagues where he's producing big last year. And I think it just gives you the confidence that that's who I am. You know, I am that guy. And he started out the season, you know, showing us he is that guy.
He is that guy, Bruce. He is that guy, and confidence can go a long way with a hitter.
We're not giving him the MVP of the league yet, okay? But the reality here is, I think if you go back and look at a video of Suzuki when he started with the Cubs and when you look at him now, I think you see a stronger player. I think you see a quieter swing that in his approach. Not the big leg kick, a very quiet movement, his hands out a little bit from his body. This is a quick bat, as quick as anybody right now. Not saying bat speed. I'm talking about just the bat and the way it comes out against the ball that he's seeing. It is something to really enjoy watching right now, because if you think back, David, he kind of felt for the ball the first year and a half that he was a Cub. By that, I mean the ball's pitched to right field, he would hit it there. The ball was pitched, the ball's pitched outside, he would hit it there. The ball pitched inside, he would kind of feel for it, maybe hit it to center or right, try to fist it that way. Right now, there's such authority in his swing that the pull is dynamic, that the hit to the right center field is dynamic. You see a confident player up there that looks like he's going to cause damage and is. So there's a different persona about Suzuki. Council, when I talked to him in spring training at the beginning of the year, said it's mostly, in his opinion, about knowing the league and gaining confidence from the success that he had last summer late.
The Cubs just also have some real smart hitters. You start with Ian Happ leading off. He's very selective. The discipline speaks for itself. We're used to seeing that. And then you see Suzuki, the start he's off to. Bellinger's so key at number three. And then you got Morel with the explosive bat and doing what he has done to start this season. And Bruce, it's a deep, talented lineup. You get to Nico Horner. You get to Michael Busch, who had quite a day, homering against his former team, remember me, and then finishing the game off with a diving stab of a line drive. So it's just a lot of fun. You got Dansby Swanson going deep. It's just a lot of consistency. And, yeah, it's only 1 week, but I don't know, Bruce, if they're ever going to lose at Wrigley Field.
Well, okay, the Rockies are the Rockies, okay? They are the worst team in the National League. But the Cubs had to play their games to beat them in weather that, you know, games were questionable as to whether they should be played or not. They were played. The Cubs won. The Dodgers, on the other hand, are no joke. They were defeated three times yesterday, and they took you to the last out of the game, okay? They were wiped out three times, and they came back in a game where they didn't get the normal pitching that they get. Bobby Miller, you know, a local product, just wasn't the great pitcher that he has been. And he's a guy that features a 98.4 mile per hour fastball, the highest average of any pitcher, starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And as you said, they had a great approach, but the Dodgers are so impressive, Dave. Even in losing, you're going down to the last out against them to try to beat them. That is impressive.
Yeah, and today it will be Yamamoto against Jordan Wicks. The game starts at 3:05 right here on The Score with pregame coverage at 2:30. Pat and Ron will call the first pitch at 3:05 with Zach's pregame before that, Bruce. So a lot to look forward to today. We'll continue to talk Cubs. Before we get out to the phone calls, 312-644-6767, a moment on the White Sox, because last night their best player, the untouchable one, Luis Robert Jr., he slipped. No, he I didn't even think he slipped. I don't know what happened, but he suffered a hip injury rounding first. He gets a stand-up double, and then he leaves the game. I don't know when he'll come back, but it comes after a day that they're trying to deal with the loss of Eloy Jimenez with another injury. Bruce, we're 1 week in, 1-6 the White Sox are, and the definition of worst-case scenario applies to this start for them. What can we expect, and what do you know, if anything, about the Robert injury in terms of its severity?
We don't know any more than they said they were going to examine it, and Grafal was not as confident that this is a short injury, but that's just speculation at this point. David, the one thing about White Sox injuries that I find mind-boggling is the fact that they occur on non-athletic type situations, okay?
Right.
To me, and this is reminiscent of what occurred to Robert 3 years ago when he had the hip flexor and kept him out of half of a season just running to first base. This one just crossing first base. Eloy's injury, again, was not anything that he was doing that was out of the ordinary, just running down a line. If you felt that bad luck was just following one team, you'd have to believe that was the White Sox. Again, whatever can go wrong has gone wrong for the Chicago White Sox. But these are non-athletic situations where they're not having to put out a tremendous amount of energy or do something out of the ordinary on the bases when they're getting hurt. And I just don't understand how it keeps happening.
These are injury-prone players is what we're dealing with. You can't deny that. They are injury-prone, which just means they're prone to injury. And if you look at their track record, that is entirely true and fair to say. If it sounds like a criticism, it is.
But why, David? Well, that's the question.
Why is this? Some people are put together differently, Bruce. I don't know. Look, one of these, what you'd like to do, if you could do it, would be you would like to monitor every aspect of Luis Robert Jr.'s and then previously Eloy Jimenez's pregame activity. What are they doing? How are they stretching? What are they doing to put themselves in a position where when they do have to reach for a gear, maybe they can't find, and then boom, is it? They pull a muscle.
But they didn't have to on either one of these injuries. There was no extra effort that they had to put forth. It was just common running the bases, okay? It was nothing out of the ordinary. And to me, you know, Luis Robert is one of the great baseball talents in the game. I mean, you know, Eloy, it's okay. We can separate the two. Eloy's been injured every year since he was a player in the minor leagues with the Chicago Cubs. There has not been one year, except I think 2020 when he played 58 out of the 60 games in the truncated season, that he hadn't been hurt. So we can understand that. We've already made our decision that Eloy is going to get hurt every year and maybe multiple times. With Robert, it was that one time, and pretty much, I mean, he's had other injuries. He only played 145 last year. That seems like enough, but it's still missing 17 games. This guy is one of the great talents in Major League Baseball, and it's just mind-boggling that they are going to have to play games without him. Hopefully, this is not a long-term injury. The first hip flexor injury was a grade 3, which kept him out forever. We're hoping it's a lot less than that this time around.
Thank you, Dr. Levine. Let's hear from Pedro Grifol, the Sox manager, on Luis Robert Jr.'s injury.
You know, it was unfortunate to see, you know, to see Louis, you know, go down like that. It's a hip flexor. So right now we don't, you know, we'll wait till tomorrow. So there's, you know, best case news, and then obviously, you know, the other side of that too. So. But we'll wait. I mean, I'm not going to comment on any of that stuff until he gets x-rays tomorrow morning.
Pedro Grifol on Luis Robert Jr. You can hear the frustration and disappointment in his voice. I'm sure Sox fans feel it. Let's go out to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Mike is in Glencoe. Good morning, Mike. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, fellas. And I certainly want to avoid any lazy analysis like Rick Hahn does. But I think there's one other development that hasn't received much attention on the Sox in the wake of this awful week. You guys have talked a lot about the long-range impact of the Kansas City Stadium vote, but I'd like to mention one other thing that happened, and that's in Sacramento with the A's. Major League Baseball seems to have now opened its door to, you know, AAA cities becoming Major League communities, allowing them to play in minor league stadiums. These are the kind of communities that are so desperate. If you read it, you know, the quotes from the Sacramento mayor, they're so desperate to be major league status. They're the kind of communities I think would raise the money to build a stadium for people like Jerry Reinsdorf to give them whatever they want, because it's important to the community to be called a major league city. And Major League Baseball apparently is willing to go along with it. And I think that, more so than Eloy and Robert and Grifol, that's the real long-range threat to White Sox fans, that a Portland or a Charlotte or a Sacramento-type community can say, here's the money, Jerry, come on down. You know, was it 30 years ago Tampa Bay offered it? What do you guys think?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. Bruce, I'll let you weigh in. I don't necessarily look at that as a realistic threat by the White Sox, but curious what you think.
Well, Sacramento already is considered in many areas a possible major league city, okay? So this could be a litmus test over the next 3 or 4 years of experiment of expansion, because the intent of MLB is to expand in 4 years, and Nashville is certainly one city that's going to get a team, And is it Sacramento or Portland? In this case, you can experiment with a city that, by the way, has a pretty big, excuse me, David, a pretty big television market, okay, in Sacramento. And that's going to be key as to that as well. But to me, there's going to be expansion in 4 years. There's going to be a change of National and American League. There's going to be a change in the record book. There's going to be all kinds of regional baseball play. That's futuristic, but that's what I see. Your thoughts?
Jerry Reinsdorf can flirt with the Nashville mayor. He can have the threat, the implied threat, veiled threat of moving the team down there. There are other cities that might want in on the action. Chicago's big enough and strong enough and passionate enough about baseball to support two teams. There's no excuse, and there's no reason for the White Sox to leave town. There are too many good reasons to stay. There are too many possibilities and ways to build a new stadium, whether it's at the 78 or whether it's staying at 35th and Shields and renovating that. I don't think there is any compelling reason to leave. Sell the team. If you're going to move it, sell the team first. I don't think, Bruce, that the White Sox, the Nashville White Sox, the Portland White Sox, whatever the case may be, would be any more successful than the Chicago White Sox can be. And that David, is the challenge of either this ownership group or whoever Jerry would sell it to. Just please sell it soon if you're going to do that, because there's no reason for them to leave.
David, the first thing that the new owner will do is say, we have to have a new ballpark or we're going to move. Okay? Mm-hmm. So nobody likes the idea of Jerry and his group doing it. You're going to hear the same thing once Jerry sells it. People might be saying, okay, that's great. We'll listen to it then. We don't want Jerry and his group to do it. I get that. I get the pushback. But the reality is that the White Sox, the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois deserve a new ballpark on the south side, whether it's at...
So work it out in the 78. Work it out in the South Loop.
Okay,
figure out a way to invest your money and figure out a way that the public is not going to be saddled with a big tax burden.
I understand,
and
but
work
the
it
problem's
out.
Not going to go away, David. They need a new ballpark, okay? It's antiquated by Major League Baseball standards at 35th and Shields right now.
It seems like it is. It seems like they've convinced themselves that that is the solution to the problem, is building a new ballpark. I respect that and understand why. I just want to see them, how much are the Sox willing to invest? How much are the Sox, whether it's this ownership group or the next one, what is in it for them? We know what the Bears are willing to put into the lakefront property that they want to build with a dome stadium. We know that they were $2 billion of the McCaskey's money. I think we'd have a better argument, a more nuanced discussion, if we knew exactly what Jerry Reinsdorf was putting into this. All right, let's move back to the phone lines, Bruce, because I want to get to some other issues. Joel is in St. Charles. Joel, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Morning. Suzuki. You know, last year I kind of noticed, but it seemed to me that he kind of became one of the guys. And I think he's having fun, and I think that's what the difference is.
Joel, could be. Good observation. Bruce, what do you think? You're in the clubhouse a lot. He's got a good sense of humor, right?
Who, Suzuki?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, everybody has a good sense of humor when things are going well. I don't think it was a great sense of humor when he was benched last year by David Ross right before he came back and took it out on a Major League Baseball, his anger about having to sit down. Remember, that was a huge story back then, David, that this guy that they signed to a long-term contract was a bust out last July.
I remember, Bruce. I've been questioning Seiya Suzuki. I wasn't a big believer that the final 6 weeks of the season were enough to convince me that he deserved to be the number two hitter on this team, that he deserved the benefit of the doubt. I was in a prove-it mode with Seiya Suzuki, and seven games in, he's proven a lot.
Well, he did in August and September.
Yeah.
We just didn't know if it was repeatable or sustainable.
Right.
So far, he's showing us that he's one among the elite hitters in Major League Baseball right now.
No doubt about it. He's off to a great start, and certainly the Cubs are too. 5-2 and their offense is the biggest reason why. We're going to shift gears when we come back and Inside the Clubhouse. The great Steve Stone will join us. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Ground ball, slow roller to short. They get one at second, over to first. And that's the ball game. It's Kansas City picking up a 2-1 win over the White Sox.
Well, unfortunately, the team that had turned just one double play all season has turned now six or seven of them against the Sox, including the game ender there.
Tough loss last night. Thank you, NBC Sports Chicago, for that highlight of the White Sox 2-1 loss to the Kansas City Royals that drops them to 1-6 after the first seven games of the season. Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. Talking baseball, a pleasure now to bring in, you heard his voice there. It is very familiar to every baseball fan in Chicago. Steve Stone, Score's baseball expert and also the analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine, David. Tough one last night, but it wasn't, I mean, a loss is a loss, quite obviously, but we lost a couple of players last night, Brebbia and Luis Robert, and Luis Robert specifically didn't look particularly good.
So, Steve, we really appreciate your time this morning. Bruce and I were talking earlier just to how this fits the definition of a worst-case scenario for the White Sox after the first week. You lose Eloy Jimenez. You lose now Luis Robert Jr. How great is a challenge for Pedro Grifol to try to keep things headed in the right direction and for a ball team that you know needed everything to go right, wanted to get off to a good start, but this is not that?
No, even with those two guys, it would be a tough battle because this team offensively wasn't producing the way they believe they can. Now without them, it's going to be even more difficult. So you're going to have to fill in. You're going to have to mix and match. You're going to have to play really clean games. You're going to have to play. You're going to have to play games where there's very little margin for error. You're not going to be able to make any misplays. You're going to have to do everything just about right to come away winning baseball games. So, look, it's challenging, but everybody knows injuries are going to come. You just have to hope that they come to non-essential members of your team, and that hasn't been the case in the early going for the Sox. There's a few guys that they counted on and a few guys that that were the heart and soul of this team that are injured, and we'll have to see in the case of Luis Robert. We'll have to see just for how long.
Steve, the surprising part is that the White Sox are losing differently than I thought. I knew they would probably have difficulty scoring a lot of runs, but the starting pitching has been exceptionally good for the Chicago White Sox. The rest is, you know, kind of wonky, but are you kind of surprised that the pitching, starting pitching has been there like it has been, and do you think it's sustainable?
Well, if you watch Garrett Crochet in spring training, you'll realize that he had started to figure it out. And so it's not surprising that he comes up with two gems. And as far as the rest of the rotation is concerned, they've done good. Eric Fetty has thrown the ball very well. Soroka has thrown it pretty well. All things considered, I think you're right, Bruce. The pitching has been surprising. And normally, when you get pretty good pitching, you're going to do okay. I mean, I don't think anybody could have predicted that Kansas City would have the kind of starting rotation they have, but they're second in baseball as far as starting rotation and their ERA is concerned. So they've had a wonderful start to this season pitching-wise. And I think the Sox are very similar. They're not up as far as second in baseball and starting pitching, but the starting pitching has been very surprising and I think gratifying to the folks who helped put it together.
And tonight the Royals put out Michael Wacha against Chris Flexen, 6'10", first pitch, White Sox and Royals. And Steve, when you look at the injuries to Eloy and Luis Robert, unfortunately it's hard to get past that for a moment. I wonder, do you have a theory? Do you have a thought? Are the White Sox doing everything that they should be doing before games? It sounds silly to even ask, but are these guys stretching properly? Are they eating? Is their nutrition what it should be? What's the working theory for why this continues to happen to the same people?
I don't believe it's because they're not training right. I think they're training as well as they can possibly train. I think they're training like a lot of other teams do. We completely changed the training staff, so it wasn't the old staff that was to blame. It's not the new staff that is to blame. It's casting your lot in many instances with guys who have a history of getting hurt. And when they do then get hurt again, you can't be all that surprised. But that's kind of the deal. I mean, you keep hoping, and we keep hoping every year, that Eloy is going to be able to put that 1 year together where everything goes well, and we see the guy who can hit 40-plus home runs, drive in 100-plus runs. Unfortunately, his body does not allow him to do that. That's a very frustrating situation, certainly for Eloy, but also for just about everybody else that's associated with this team and would like to see this team win consistently. It's a very frustrating situation. But it's not anything that they're not doing training-wise.
Steve, the Chicago White Sox started 2023 7-21. And they're 1-6 so far this year. How are we as baseball fans going to be able to figure out whether Pedro Grifol is a good manager, a good developer, a guy that's right for this team? Because in my experience, I can't figure out how to answer that question. I wonder if you can.
I think the jury is still out as far as how good a manager Pedro is going to be. I tend to believe that he's going to be a very good manager. The situation dictates that you have to play this whole scenario out. Give him some time where he gets his team together. He actually has the team that he envisioned along with his staff in spring training, and then see how they do. I think last year, quite obviously, when you look at everything that went on, I don't think the team was put together particularly well. I think there was glaring holes in it. We all know that defensively they couldn't get the job done. This team defensively is much better. So one of the things that Pedro set out to do was get a better defensive unit, and I think they've been able to do that. That's Chris Getz and his front office that brought in some guys who can catch the ball. I think it's just way too early to evaluate what Pedro is and what he's going to be. I keep going back to the Sparky Anderson philosophy that I always have. Sparky Anderson was a genius because he could write Rose and Bench and Perez and Morgan. He'd write them in the lineup every day, and lo and behold, they were pretty good. And everybody viewed Sparky as a genius. Well, then Sparky took a 48-minute plane ride, and he flew to Detroit. And somewhere on that 48-minute plane ride, he became an idiot because he finished last with the Tigers. The same guy who was a genius with Cincinnati finished last with the Tigers. Now, 5 short years later, the Tigers in 84 go 35-5. They win the whole thing, and Sparky became a genius again. The long explanation to a very short question is, if you don't have the horses, you're not going to win. I don't care who you are, whether it's Brian Snitker or anybody else, Bruce Bochy, you name it. They got to have the horses. They don't have the horses, they don't win. That's the way this game is played. There's too many good players around baseball where if you don't have a team assembled that can play some really good baseball on a daily basis, you're not going to win, and I don't care who's managing that team. So the jury is still out for Pedro. You got to give him some time. You got to let the team get back together again, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, I believe, because I've talked with him, I understand his philosophy of baseball. I think he understands the game of baseball. But you put Eloy out there, you put Luis out there, you put a couple of other guys who have gotten hurt early out there, and they get hurt. Tough to blame that on Pedro.
Steve, I want to get away from the White Sox for a quick moment because the Dodgers are in town, and it's a spectacle. It's a traveling road show. It's Ohtani and everything else that comes with the Dodgers. Wanted to get your perspective. You mentioned Sparky Anderson. It brings to mind the Big Red Machine. Great lineup. And you think of other great lineups, and I'm sure you were part of them and pitched against many of them. When you look at the Betts, Ohtani, Freddie Freeman succession, those three hitters, as good as they are, as dangerous as they are in a row, can you think how that compares to other whether it's at the top of the order or the middle of the order, because baseball has changed, three consecutive hitters as dangerous and as good as those three are in baseball history?
Look, they're very good, and the Dodgers also have a few other guys who can swing the bat pretty well, too. So, I mean, you look at those three, and then you forget about Max Muncy, and he winds up hitting the ball out of the ballpark. So, I mean, the Dodgers have a very solid team top to bottom. And I look back to some of the teams that you're talking about. That big red machine had Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, Davey Concepcion, who everybody forgets about, Ken Griffey Sr. They added George Foster in 77. They had Pete Rose. I mean, that team to me was as dangerous a team as we've ever seen. And then you look at the 27 Yankees, they had six Hall of Famers on that team. Everybody knows, of course, about Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth, but they forget about Tony Lazzeri and Bob Musil and Earl Combs and Mark Koenig. I mean, they had a wonderful baseball team. They only went 110-44, so seemingly they did pretty well. As far as the Giants are concerned, you know, Bruce brought up beforehand, to me, the 63 Giants. And I look back at Willie Mays and Willie McCovey and Orlando Cepeda and Felipe Alou. In fact, a lot of people don't realize that the Giants brought up all the Alous, every one of them. And they had a wonderful team that year. I just don't think they compare with some of these other great teams. But the Dodgers are very strong. However, what we have to do, because when you talk about the other teams you're talking about, they all passed the test of time. They had wonderful players who stayed wonderful players for a long period of time. Let's see how long the Dodgers stay together, and let's see how long those guys are able to contribute and play the way they're playing, and then we can start talking with them as far as some of the other great teams. Because the one thing that people don't realize, in the game of baseball, we measure greatness by guys who pass the test of time being great. And that's the only thing the Dodgers don't have at this point, is passing the test of time together as a team.
From the broadcasting standpoint, Steve, you have a new partner in Jen Shriven, great young broadcaster. How difficult is it, and you've had both through your long and meritorious career, how difficult is it to do 3 hours no matter who your partner is, for a team that's at times not very watchable?
Well, one of the things that keeps me going is that I love the game of baseball. And, you know, for me, bad baseball, spotty baseball, inconsistent baseball is still baseball, and I still love it. Would I like to see them playing better consistently? Of course. I mean, everybody who broadcasts for a living wants to broadcast a team who goes out there on a daily basis and has a chance to win 100 games. That's the ideal, and occasionally, very occasionally, you get that, except if you were a Braves broadcaster when they won 14 straight division titles, you were in pretty good shape on a yearly basis. And when you look at those teams, you can understand why they were able to do that. So we all want to do that. The fact is we don't get a chance to. So I go to the park every day, and every day is a new day. I don't care if the team is 6-1 or 1-6. I think that you go to the park, if you love the game of baseball, and I certainly do, you find beauty in the game regardless of how spotty the game is played on a daily basis. And so when I go to the park today, it's going to be as if yesterday didn't happen. Luis Robert's not going to be in the lineup. Eloy's not going to be in the lineup. But still, for the sake of what's going to happen today, yesterday didn't happen at all. And we'll pick it up today. This could be a game where the Sox play a really good brand of baseball. They win the ball game. It will stand unto itself, and we'll go on to tomorrow. So that's pretty much how I do it. It's the love of the game, the desire to go out there every day, be at a major league park, watch the greatest baseball players in the world sometimes fail, sometimes play really poorly, and sometimes do things that you look at them and you go, wow, how is he able to do that? So for me, that's not a difficult part. I mean, I would love the team to win. I think all of us who broadcast for a living would. The fact is, many teams are not going to do it, so you just have to go out and appreciate the greatest players in the world and appreciate what I believe is the greatest game in the world.
Steve, that's a great perspective. Thanks for sharing it. It's a great lesson in any walk of life, in any profession, really. So, and it comes through every single day that you are in the booth, so we appreciate that as well. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Take care. Have a good rest of the show, guys, and we'll see if the Sox can turn it around, and we'll see how many guys they have to play.
Steve Stone, the Score baseball expert, also the analyst for NBC Sports Chicago and the Chicago White Sox tonight. Sox 6-10, Chris Flexen against Michael Wacha in Kansas City. All right, Bruce, when we come back, had a lot to say there about the Sox and their bad luck. We can also switch gears and talk about the Cubs starting pitching. We've got Ben Brown at 10 o'clock. We'll get to your phone calls as well. 312-644-6767. It's Inside the Clubhouse at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse until 11 o'clock here in Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Beautiful Saturday morning. Bruce, did you really think that the White Sox starting pitching has been above average?
Yeah. Would you have predicted Crochet being one of the top pitchers in the American League
after
two starts?
I like him a lot.
Would you say that Soroka has been more than just adequate in his start so far?
Yeah, he deserved better than he got the other night.
So
I get it.
To me, David, any type of rebuild, any type of team that's gone bad that wants to get better, you have to start with starting pitching, okay? That was the intent by Chris Getz and his people to go out there and start to find starting pitching that had done it before, that could do it like Crochet. They certainly found out quickly, and to their credit, that when you look at some of the other people that they wanted to use in the rotation, it wasn't going to work. They reworked that. So you have a guy that was going to be a starting pitcher that could be potentially a dominant closer right now in Michael Kopech.
Right.
These are things that you look at of a rebuild or an expansion franchise and say, this is where you have to go if you're going to be good anytime soon. Quickest way to being better than bad is starting pitching for me, David.
In that context, Drew Thorpe, the number three prospect in the system last night at Double A Birmingham, made his debut, struck out 8-5 scoreless. Bruce, I would rather see him rushed up to the big league club rather than them take a flyer on Mike Clevenger. I know we can agree to disagree on the Clevenger situation, Drew Thorpe, will he be here sooner or later?
Well, David, I hate to give you a hardcore old baseball guy answer, but what's the point of rushing him up right now?
Fair enough.
Other than entertainment for you and the White Sox fans.
You have to see what you have. What do you have to lose? I guess it's that's a counter argument. How could it be worse?
No, I'm in agreement with you that White Sox fans, you and everyone else, are worthy of looking at people that have a future, okay? I understand that, and that's a good point. The better point, I would say, is, boy, he got roughed up in spring training when they first got him in the trade.
Yeah.
Let's get his legs under him, and maybe by June or July, he is a viable part of their rotation. But I think White Sox fans have something to look forward to if this front office continues to look for pitching as the beginning, because certainly that's the building block that I believe in. I don't think that makes me a baseball genius, because we know pitching is so important in baseball. Yeah, you have to be able to score runs. You have to defend. Again, the White Sox are not just a rehab or rebuild. It's pretty much an expansion type franchise, because even the minor league system that Chris Getz was being pushed back on before he stepped up to this other job wasn't quite there, because some of the international guys who were supposed to be contributors to this team have failed. Outside of Luis Robert, there's been some big failures there. So they're dealing with situations right now that were beyond even Chris Getz's control.
When we come back, Ben Brown, the young Cubs right-hander who had a rough debut against the Texas Rangers, bounced back strongly against the Rockies at Wrigley Field on Wednesday night. We will talk to him next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse until 11 o'clock here in Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Beautiful Saturday morning. Bruce, did you really think that the White Sox starting pitching has been above average?
Yeah. Would you have predicted Crochet being one of the top pitchers in the American League
after two
starts?
I like him a lot.
Would you say that Soroka has been more than just adequate in his start so far?
Yeah, he deserved better than he got the other night.
So
I get it.
To me, David, any type of rebuild, any type of team that's gone bad that wants to get better, you have to start with starting pitching, okay? That was the intent by Chris Getz and his people to go out there and start to find starting pitching that had done it before, that could do it like Crochet. They certainly found out quickly, and to their credit, that when you look at some of the other people that they wanted to use in the rotation, it wasn't going to work. They reworked that. So you have a guy that was going to be a starting pitcher that could be potentially a dominant closer right now in Michael Kopech.
Right.
These are things that you look at of a rebuild or an expansion franchise and say, this is where you have to go if you're going to be good anytime soon. Quickest way to being better than bad is starting pitching for me, David.
In that context, Drew Thorpe, the number three prospect in the system last night at AA Birmingham, made his debut, struck out 8-5 scoreless. Bruce, I would rather see him rushed up to the big league club rather than them take a flyer on Mike Clevenger. I know we can agree to disagree on the Clevenger situation, Drew Thorpe, will he be here sooner or later?
Well, David, I hate to give you a hardcore old baseball guy answer, but what's the point of rushing him up right now?
Fair enough.
Other than entertainment for you and the White Sox fans.
You have to see what you have. What do you have to lose? I guess it's that's a counter argument. How could it be worse?
No, I mean, look, I'm in agreement with you that White Sox fans, you and everyone else, are worthy of looking at people that have a future, okay? I understand that, and that's a good point. The better point, I would say, is, boy, he got roughed up in spring training when they first got him in the trade.
Yeah.
Let's get his legs under him, and maybe by June or July, he is a viable part of their rotation. But I think White Sox fans have something to look forward to if this front office continues to look for pitching as the beginning, because certainly that's the building block that I believe in. I don't think that makes me a baseball genius, because we know pitching is so important in baseball. Yeah, you have to be able to score runs. You have to defend. Again, the White Sox are not just a rehab or rebuild. It's pretty much an expansion type franchise, because even the minor league system that Chris Getz was being pushed back on before he stepped up to this other job wasn't quite there, because some of the international guys who were supposed to be contributors to this team have failed. Outside of Luis Robert, there's been some big failures there. So they're dealing with situations right now that were beyond even Chris Getz's control.
When we come back, Ben Brown, the young Cubs right-hander who had a rough debut against the Texas Rangers, bounced back strongly against the Rockies at Wrigley Field on Wednesday night. We will talk to him next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.